Well, welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are recapping a somewhat convincing win for the Kansas Jayhawks against the West Virginia Mountaineers, and then looking ahead to the Oklahoma Sooners game coming up this weekend. To help me do all of that, I have, as usual, Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So first of all, I'm going to go ahead and start it off with what I believe is probably the most exciting news for you. The announcement that the jerseys that they're going to be wearing on Saturday are the 90s retro jerseys. It seemed from everything I was looking at on Twitter that you were rather excited about that. Is that the case, or was there something else that you were a little preoccupied with earlier tonight?
Yeah, no, super awesome that they're doing it. Actually, I double checked the highlight video that they showed or whatever, and it looks like all of the highlights that they have are technically from before I became a fan. So I started becoming a fan when Jeff Boshi went there. You know, he's from North Dakota just like I am, so that kind of got me into KU basketball, and that was the 98-99 season. And it looks like all those uniforms, although they're the latter ones are similar style to the ones that they wore. All those highlights are from before I became a fan, so I don't feel like an old man yet. But yeah, as someone who's, you know, every piece of KU merchandise that I have in terms of, you know, jerseys or shorts or whatever are from that era, it's pretty cool to, you know, be seeing that on the court on Saturday. It's going to be pretty fun to watch. I think it gives an extra, you know, layer to the game, obviously. And this is the first one of the throwbacks that they do, which I like them all, but this is the first one that I have like an actual, you know, personal connection with. So I think that makes it even extra special to me.
Yeah. So me personally, I didn't actually become a fan until I believe it was 99. I didn't move out to Kansas until the mid 90s. So it'd been like 95, 96. And so like, I didn't latch on immediately to the team because, you know, I came from Maryland. So I was a Maryland fan for a while and then started to get involved with the teams, watching the teams a whole lot more. Cause of course, back then it was a lot harder to watch, you know, teams that were halfway across the country. And so just because of ease of access, it was a little bit easier. My parents also didn't subscribe to stuff like ESPN at the time. So the only games that we were really able to watch were the ones that were on local broadcast television. So, but you know, I really kind of started to pay attention. And then of course, when Heinrich and Collison were there and really, you know, making noise, that's when I really just kind of fell in love with the team. But it is weird kind of looking at those old clips and like seeing the circus font and everything else with those jerseys. And, you know, I wore those jerseys for a really long time. And so I do remember some early games from my KU fanhood in those games. And, you know, it's one of those weird things that takes you back to your childhood, which is just kind of still really strange for me. So I'm definitely excited to bring those jerseys back. You know, it was funny your comment saying that we're going to spend 55 of the 60 minutes considering we only do, you know, about 40 to 45 minutes anytime. So I don't think
what is time anyway?
Tonight. Well, right. No, I don't think my wife would appreciate an extended cut tonight, but we can definitely jump back to this after we talk about the other stuff that we have at hand. If there's anything particular.
One other thing.
Go ahead.
Real quick here, you know, in those highlights, one thing I always flash back to is the center court where they had the, you know, the state of Kansas. And first they had that yellow background, and then they had obviously the red and blue with the K in the middle. Maybe, you know, I think it'd be kind of cool if they brought that out for Saturday's game. I don't hate the big giant bird at midcourt, but I think it'd be kind of cool to see that personally.
Yeah, if they're going to go retro, they should do more than just jerseys. They should make the entire thing retro. You know, even like they could go real crazy with it, you know, and give everybody like 90s hairdo wigs to put on and stuff like that. Then it would really look retro. Okay, I'm going crazy.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Instead, let's go ahead and pivot to obviously probably what we're actually here to talk about, which would be the West Virginia victory for Kansas. I have to admit, I was a little concerned about this game at various times throughout the night, but Kansas won 58-49, shutting West Virginia down completely. West Virginia didn't score a single point with about 6 minutes left in the game from that point forward, which was absolutely phenomenal. It's hard to say that the main story of this game should be anything other than the defense. But even when we're talking about the defense, like there's a couple different players that you could really highlight. So I want from you, what do you think is the biggest story, the biggest player to come out of this night?
Yeah, I think actually, everyone's going to talk about Marcus Garrett. I think my story is the fact that, Kansas went into one of the tougher places in the country to play. West Virginia hasn't lost at home yet. They're obviously a top 10 team in both KenPom and Torvik. Really good team. I think Final Four contender. And with KU's three best offensive players, all playing not very well. Devon Dotson had the highest offensive rating of the guys as a 91, according to Torvik anyway. Even with all that being said, Kansas, had a pretty comfortable victory against a fellow Final Four contender. So to me, that's the story, that they played that badly on offense and still won by almost double digits. I think that
Now,
more than
real
anything
quick.
else, kind of go
Well,
on.
real quick, I was going to ask. You said the top three offensive players. Who are you considering to be the top three?
Dotson, Azubuike, and Garrett are my top three offensive players for the team.
Okay, I think that's where we'll disagree a little bit, just because Marcus Garrett has had even issues this year in terms of consistent offensive output from him personally. I do agree that he, as we've talked about before, he facilitates a lot of the offense. But if you're talking about main guys going to put up points, I don't know that I would consider Garrett to be one of those guys. I mean, it would be hard to say, it's either Moss or Brown individually, but as a group, your third best option is probably going to be from one of those two or from Agbaji. Now, if it's Agbaji that you're talking about as the third option, he was pretty much non-existent as well, although he had an offensive rating of 120. As opposed to the 91 from Dotson or the 61 from Garrett.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned there that, in terms of the overall package, Marcus Garrett with his passing ability makes him one of the best offensive players on the team. To me, it's not just, the best scorers or the best shooters. Overall package, it's probably Marcus Garrett. And then I think also, you're talking about how you need Ochai Agbaji and Isaiah Moss and Christian Brown kind of combined to equal, the third offensive player. So to me, that kind of lends more credence to it being Garrett. So I would stick with him as being the third best offensive player. But in any event, with those three playing so poorly offensively, to have them come out and Kansas, still win going away, shows their championship mettle to me more than almost anything else they could have done last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, we talk about typically how you have to have a very balanced team. And if you look comparatively to the rest of college basketball this year, Kansas actually does have a fairly good offense. The problem is that offense is down so much across the entire sport compared to what we're used to seeing, so that this Kansas team doesn't look like it's anything great offensively, but they still have one of the better offenses in the nation. They are ranked at this point 14th in offensive efficiency, which seems absolutely crazy when you think about all the offensive problems that they've had. But when you then take into account the fact that they are playing in a conference that is phenomenal on defense night in and night out, and they are still one of the better teams, and the whole sport is down offensively, like it makes sense that when you look at it in the microcosm of this season, they actually are a very good offensive team. It just doesn't show up in the raw numbers like you might expect it to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think definitely. But yeah, I think, just overall, obviously it was more of a defensive game than anything. Obviously, neither team got to a point per possession. Adjusted wise, Kansas, not a bad game just because of how good of a defense West Virginia has. But and you wonder if maybe they had made a couple more threes. They definitely had the opportunity to make some open ones. I mean, Devon Dotson just won for 5 from 3, and that's probably a topic of discussion that we, or you know, the broader KU, I guess, media, whatever, for lack of a better term, should have, given his lack of ability to make the three this year, because I think we're going to see a lot more of what West Virginia did on Wednesday night. Yeah, last night. That was last night. Did I just break the fourth wall as far as when we're recording?
Oh no, we've talked about that in plenty of other times, so I'm not too worried about it. Well, I always say it tonight when we're talking at the beginning. So I think it's pretty obvious when these episodes come out at like 7 o'clock in the morning that we didn't record them that early.
Sure. I'm definitely not a morning person. Don't do that to me ever. I think, you know, to get back to what I was saying, I think we're going to see a lot more going forward, what West Virginia did last night, and just really sagging off Dotson and really not wanting him to be, you know, getting by him in the lane. Sometimes it didn't even matter. You saw him go by guys both to the right and to the left. But for the most part, I think we're going to see teams really start to sag off. That's an extra help guy kind of for Azubuike as well. And I think they're just going to make Dotson shoot that three. And like we talked about earlier in the season with Marcus Garrett, like, he's just going to have to do it. Even if he doesn't make a high percentage of them, he's just going to have to shoot 4 or 5 threes a game just to, you know, entice guys to come out and guard him a little bit, I think.
Yeah. So I wasn't actually able to watch the game live. I had some, I had basketball practice for my kids rec league team. And I had some issues with my ESPN Plus subscription. So much fun. So I had to go back and watch the replay this morning. What I noticed when I was watching the game, and I've seen other people kind of talk about it here and there, but it seemed like West Virginia was focused extensively on keeping Doak out of the game offensively. And they were able to do that quite a bit up front without relying on a bunch of extra help, you know, and then getting foul trouble on him kind of changed, I think, a little bit of what they were doing when they weren't focusing on Doak the way that they were, which allowed guys like Dotson to get a few easy buckets. Marcus Garrett hit a lot of backdoor cuts. Brown had a backdoor cut that he went in fairly early in the game. So that allowed them to kind of stick with them early in the game. But then West Virginia went up and, you know, Kansas was having to kind of deal with what was going on there. And really ultimately they ended up sagging off because Udoka was starting to exert himself down low, both offensively and defensively. And so they were trying to give some additional help to make sure he wasn't going to continue to go off on them and really start to rack up points there, which opened up open shots for, you know, Dotson and Garrett, and even like Abaji and Moss, you know, and Moss really kind of took over at the end of the game there. As he was given so many open looks, and West Virginia at that point just couldn't do anything. You know, this game really came down to, I'm looking over here at KenPom at the quarterly breakdown, you know, in this West Virginia got out to a big lead in the first quarter. They were up by 6, and that ended up being the margin at the half. But these two teams were even at 10 points in the second quarter of the game and 13 points in the third quarter of the game. You know, so they were fairly even in the middle of this game, but it was Kansas completely blowing them out of the water in the last part of this game, specifically in the last 6 minutes, where they just really clamped down on the defense. Offensively, though, like, I thought that West Virginia kind of did exactly what they did. You know, this game was eerily similar to the game in Lawrence, where West Virginia got out to an early lead. Kansas kind of kept them from really running away with it. And then Kansas finally came on strong at the end after they seemed to have figured everything out. I did notice, though, that West Virginia played this game a little differently than they did in terms of stylistically. They didn't really kind of they're back to kind of being more of a press Virginia type team, whereas before they were just playing solid defense and getting pressure that way. Now they are actively trying to pressure people, very similar to what they have done in years prior. But they are still a very good offensive rebounding team. You know, they got roughly 40% of their offensive rebounding chances, which is an absolutely phenomenally high number. They had 15 total offensive rebounds, which again is just absolutely ridiculous, giving them all those second chance points. So I know I've kind of rambled for a little bit here, but of all the things I talked about, was there anything kind of jumped out to you, or any other points that you think that we need to make about this game?
Well, I think, a lot of people brought this up as well, but the last, I think, four or five KU West Virginia games have been pretty similar where, like you said, West Virginia gets ahead and Kansas comes back. I mean, I think Bob Huggins is probably pretty sick of Bill Self at this point. And, I think if you're a West Virginia fan, I think you have to be kind of discouraged by this year's team. Their front court is so good, but the backcourt is just terrible. I mentioned it kind of last week, last night when the game was going on. Jordan McCabe was like a 20-something percent three-point shooter, and at one point he was 2-for-2 or 2-for-3 or whatever, and I just kind of said, well, if the worst guard in the Big 12 is going to beat you, you just have to tip your cap to him. But I just think that kind of illustrates the problems that West Virginia has had this year when they have had problems. There's no more Javon Carter, there's no more Daxter Miles. Like, it's guys who, frankly, are kind of borderline, power five type players. And I think that, I saw Smoking Musk at the West Virginia SB Nation site mention this. Like, if you're a scoring point guard or a scoring guard or whatever, why would you come to West Virginia and play for Bob Huggins, who's going to yank you if you take one bad three-pointer and stuff? And I think, unlike some of the other games where KU just kind of roared back and took the game, in this one, I think Bob Huggins kind of outthought himself and maybe coached West Virginia out of the game a little bit more. So that's something that I think, going forward, if I were a West Virginia fan, I would be maybe a little bit wary of, and maybe, maybe it's time for old Bob to hang him up, I think.
Well, I mean, I think Bob really kind of played into the narratives that were surrounding this game, where there was a lot of people that were saying, that for West Virginia to have a chance, they really had to focus on inside, both defensively and offensively. And what they failed to account for is the fact that, Kansas is very good defensively on the inside. And so a lot of times your best opportunities are going to be scheme up a play that's going to get someone open on the outside. And when they got them open, they weren't really quick to pull the trigger, which allowed Kansas to contest some of them. And kind of the way that Kansas has been as well is, even if you don't start making them initially, you have to keep shooting them because eventually they're going to start falling. They do have some players that can make threes. They just don't consistently give them the opportunity to go ahead and take them. Or when they finally do start taking them, it's either out of desperation, and so they're not going to get good shots, or they're taking them essentially just because now they kind of feel like they have to, or it's kind of like an afterthought and they're not really able to get anything down low, which I guess is another form of desperation. But even then, they just don't seem to really consider it to be a legitimate part of their game for a while. And that has come back to bite them a couple different times. I don't think Bob Huggins is alone in that sort of philosophy, though. A lot of the older, Bill Self was the same way for like 3 years ago, where he didn't really seem to want to let guys go from three. And even at times this year, it's, kind of made me wonder should he be pushing it more? I don't think it's something that's unique to Bob Huggins. And I don't know necessarily that if someone, if he left and someone else came in, that it would be that much different, partly because of the kind of athletes that West Virginia recruits at this point. But also just kind of the fact that, it's they play in a league where dominating in the front court is a good style to play to try to get victory, especially when there's teams that are playing such good defense. And the Big 12 seems to have a lot of good three-point defending teams, which is a little weird to say because typically you don't actually see three-point defense being kind of a byproduct of actual defensive pressure. But for whatever reason, all of these teams seem to be pretty good at preventing teams from shooting three or from making a bunch of threes. And I'm wondering how much of that is actually the way that they scheme it up to make sure that all shots are contested and how much it's just kind of blind luck for them. All right. So any other final thoughts about this West Virginia game? I'm trying to think if there's anyone in particular. Well, I guess we only talked briefly about Isaiah Moss. He ended up being the hero of the game with two late threes to really kind of push it away. He had a free throw. Would you say KenPom gives the MVP to Isaiah Moss? I personally, though, wonder whether that should have gone to Marcus Garrett He played all 40 minutes. He was absolutely phenomenal on defense. And yes, while he had some turnovers, two of those turnovers came on some rather questionable calls. One of them being an offensive foul that, you know, it was weird because he got called for the offensive foul for a supposed push off. And then West Virginia came right back at him the next play, did the exact same thing, pushed him the exact same way, and they let it go completely. I'm not here to complain about the refs because, you know, I can understand a little bit of inconsistency. But, like, when you're looking at his stat line, I don't think that the turnovers were necessarily all his fault. You know, he did have six of them. But any thoughts that maybe he should have been the MVP or, you know, these advanced metrics, is it more about looking at offensive stats?
I think his only take offense into account, if I remember correctly. So that would, you know, that would make sense to me because, yeah, the turnovers were really killer. I mean, that's like the worst thing you can do, obviously, is to turn it over and not even get a shot attempt up. And while you're right that I think a couple of those were, not his fault, he definitely struggled handling them all, struggled passing them all and stuff like that. So probably his worst offensive game of the season, I would think, just kind of going off memory. And but yeah, with his defense added in, when he had five steals, I think, you know, that was really impressive. And just, you know, for him and for all defenders, obviously, it's not just about the steals. It's, you know, how well he can guard basically everybody and kind of take almost whoever he wants out of the game. And then you add those steals on top of it, and that obviously is, canceling out one of his turnovers. So, yeah, I would think that he would be my player of the game if I had to pick one. But those threes that Isaiah Moss hit were big. They all came at really big times when Kansas either needed to get back into the game or needed to extend kind of a tiny lead into a bigger one. Going from 7 points to 4 points or whatever and vice versa, is a pretty big deal. I think, you know, obviously it turns it from a two possession game into a three possession game. And, you know, when it's a 4 point lead, you are thinking to yourself, okay, that's a stop, a score, a stop, a score. Like that's certainly doable. Especially with a team like Kansas and how well they defend. But if it's seven, then it's, you know, it just seems like a little bit bigger of a lead to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of talking out of my butt here, but that just kind of, when I'm watching the game, that's kind of the trigger to me, you know, going from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7, that kind of general area is when I start getting nervous versus, you know, thinking the game is essentially tied. So he hit a couple of those big ones. Obviously that one in the corner where he wasn't even really set and was kind of leaning to his left. That was a nice shot. And then it was nice in the locker room to see Bill Self, you know, give him some props. And I can't remember what he said when he singled him out, but he certainly singled him out, yelling at him on the court a lot this year. And obviously Moss can take it. You know, he's a senior and was coached by the biggest jackass in college basketball and Fran McCaffrey for 3 years. So he can take being yelled at and probably enjoys being yelled at for like an actual good reason rather than just a random one for once. So, but it was still, you know, nice to see Self, do that to him and give him props. And I think that that's a big reason why, so many of his players and so many of his former players have so many great things to say about him because he'll get on you and he'll be hard on you and he'll yell at you and he'll demand the best from you and then he'll demand even better than that. But, you know, when you show up and you play well and you come through in a big spot, he's definitely going to give you the props and not take credit for it and stuff like that. So yet another, you know, great coaching job by Bill Self and big shots by Isaiah Moss. So I think either of those two would be fine with me.
Yeah, definitely. So what Bill Self yelled was big time at him, which, I mean, obviously those were some big time shots that he took. But yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that it has to be either Isaiah Moss or Marcus Garrett. I just, with all the times that I saw Marcus Garrett, you know, the steals that he forced were true steals where like he was guarding a guy face up, the guy tried to drive on him and he poked the ball away and took it on his own. It wasn't like a, you know, guy made a really bad pass or West Virginia was doing stupid things with the ball. They literally just straight up took the ball from people. And Marcus Garrett was a big part of that. So I thought that was rather impressive. I actually tweeted while I was watching it about how, you know, Fran Fischoa made a comment about how West Virginia was playing really poorly on offense because they had you know, 7 of their 9 possessions at one point were turnovers in a row, or, you know, 7 of like a 9 possession stretch were all turnovers. And, you know, like, I was sitting there, and I just got done watching like 3 of those Marcus Garrett steals where he literally just took the ball. I was like, West Virginia's offense isn't like, they're not being careless with it. They're not doing stupid things. Kansas is just forcing them into really bad situations and then taking the ball from them. And, you know, Kansas wasn't able to do much with it in a lot of those, but, you know, it was kind of displaying how much defensive dominance there is in the league. All right, we are running short on time. We actually went way over on this segment. So I need to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. All right. So as we continue to be a little discombobulated and have kind of a rather haphazard podcast here, let's go ahead and jump into the next game that is coming up for this team, because I want to make sure we actually do a little bit of a preview. Kansas is hosting Oklahoma. You know, that's when they're having those retro jersey nights that we were talking about. I don't want to look ahead as well to preview the Iowa State game that's coming on Big Monday. I ideally will be able to kind of have an additional podcast in between. So let's focus just on Oklahoma. I realize that these teams have played in the not too distant past, but what has changed from the last time Kansas played Oklahoma that makes you think that maybe, you know, this result may be a little bit different, whether it's Kansas wins by more than they did last time, or Oklahoma manages to keep this a fairly close game?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I haven't watched a ton of Oklahoma. You know, I did watch them play West Virginia and beat them by 10. So maybe I have a little bit more of a inflated sense of what they are. But, you know, they're just, I think this is more just a function of the Big 12 not being very good versus Oklahoma being good. You know, they beat Oklahoma State, who sucks, by a lot. They beat West Virginia, who sucks on the road, by a lot. And then they beat Iowa State, who sucks, by a lot. So, like, you know, they've, you know, played a lot of bad teams. And, you know, I mean, I think that that's more of it than anything. I guess I will say, you know, I'm a little bit worried about Brady Manek. I mean, he played really well, or not, you know, he played reasonably well in the first game. He's obviously, you know, shooting 43% from three. You know, he's playing really well. He's a guy who, if Oklahoma were maybe a little bit better, he'd be getting like some first team type love. Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, it's just more a case of getting to play some of the dregs versus anything that they're specifically doing. You know, they're, I'm looking at their, you know, record against the top three, and they're 1-2. You know, they beat West Virginia at home, obviously lost to Kansas pretty handily. And I guess, you know, they did, to be fair, only lost by 4 at Baylor. So they definitely have something in them, but I don't really foresee any way that they're going to challenge Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to turn this into a Baylor discussion, but I will notice that, you know, I will note that Baylor has had a lot more close calls than I think that they should be having if they're, you know, the actual number one team in the nation, and, you know, supposedly clearly the best team in the Big 12 Conference right now. You know, they seem to be playing a lot of really close games. They had to get bailed out against Oklahoma State, you know, in the last game that they had there, so... I don't know that I would read too much into Oklahoma, you know, only losing by 4 to Baylor. The real question that I have for this particular team is they seem to be really riding high on some momentum right now, but like you said, they haven't really played anyone who's worth any, you know, anything in terms of the actual competitiveness on the court. With West Virginia playing so poorly on the road, I don't know what it is about that team. Maybe it's just how young West Virginia is. Where they tend to play a whole lot better at home and just can't seem to keep it together on the road. But they have some really puzzling losses on the road as well. So I don't know that I can read too much into that game between Oklahoma and West Virginia. And the game against Iowa State, like, that was, you know, the first game for Iowa State after losing Tyrese Halliburton for the season. So like I you know, not really expecting much from Iowa State the rest of the year. I actually had talked about that on the 10-12 podcast that I did earlier this week, and you know, like Iowa State's going to be in a lot of trouble. So the fact that they're coming on Monday, you know, like unless they just completely play out of their minds, which I don't expect them to do at Allen Fieldhouse, you know, Kansas should run away with that one really quickly. And so, you know, I like you, I'm having a hard time finding something that's changed with this Oklahoma team that makes me wonder or makes me worry that this is going to be a close game. I mean, if I have to pick something, though, it's literally just going to be that Oklahoma seems to have some momentum. You know, but defensively, I'm not really seeing anything that they do well. They don't turn people over very much, which is probably the one area of Kansas offense that they have the most problem with. But Oklahoma's not really poised to take advantage of that. And Oklahoma on offense, like they are really bad at offensive rebounding. Like they're literally like the fourth worst team in the nation in terms of offensive rebounding. And so, you know, like that's probably one area where Kansas tends to struggle is preventing teams from getting offensive rebounds. You know, and then they don't force a ton of turnovers. So maybe like that's the one thing that Oklahoma has going for them is that they're not going to turn the ball over. But they also get blocked. They don't get blocked very much, but Kansas is really good at that. And that kind of makes up for the turnover numbers. So, you know, especially since it's going to be at home, like I'm not really worried about this game at all, unless some random guy goes off from three. You know, that's when Kansas loses weird games, that tends to be the recipe for it, is that someone's going to go off from three. I don't know that Manek can be considered to be a random guy going off from three. Maybe Christian Doolittle, even though he's one of their better three-point shooters. You know, I'm not sure that he – I would consider him to be a three-point sharpshooter or anything like that. And so – let me see. Yeah, he's taken 54 this year, so he takes an okay number, but he's definitely not one of their main three-point shooters there. So yeah, I mean, I'm not too worried about this game, but I also can't shake the feeling that this team is going to have at least another two close calls in games that we would expect them to run away with the rest of the year.
Yeah, and you mentioned the threes. You know, they take the second most threes in conference play and are making the second highest percentage. Not a super high percentage, only 35%, but that's probably their avenue to winning. You mentioned the lack of offensive rebounding. I think that's kind of big for this Kansas team, both because, you know, for whatever reason, they've kind of struggled against teams that I'm sure the four-guard lineup is a big part of this, but they've struggled against teams that really attack the offensive glass. And you know, with how good they are defensively, they're going to force a lot of first shot misses. And when you can go out there, especially, you know, the players can think in their heads, hey, you know, this team isn't going to attack the offensive glass. All we have to do is force one miss and we're probably going to get the ball back. I think that just makes you play harder defensively a little bit and kind of, you know, amps you up a little bit because all you really need to do is stop them one time to get the ball back. So I think that's going to make it even tougher on Oklahoma, knowing that they're pretty much going to have to make the shot. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to get another opportunity at it. And, you know, Kansas doesn't really give up a ton of good shots. So, like you said, I mean, it's tough to really see a path for them to win. I just think it's a pretty bad matchup for Oklahoma.
Yep. All right. Well, I guess that preview went a little bit easier than I thought it was going to. So we'll go ahead and leave that there. Before we do, any other final thoughts about this game coming up or anything else about the weekend itself that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, the uniforms are going to be awesome.
Well, right, but anything else that we haven't talked about yet? Or is there more about the uniforms that you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, no, do we have like another 45 minutes? No, I think, you know, obviously the game of the weekend is going to be that Baylor-West Virginia game. At Baylor, West Virginia is looking to avenge the game. I mean, are they going to come out fired up, or are they going to, you know, be kind of beaten down by what happened on Wednesday? It's kind of one of those things where Kansas either, you know, did Baylor a huge favor by kind of demoralizing West Virginia or maybe made it tough on them, but probably going to be the toughest game so far that Baylor has had this year in terms of conference play other than the game at Kansas. And they haven't really, you know, played a really good team since then. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how they adjust to the change in competition.
Well, I would even say that game at Kansas probably wasn't that tough. It was tough on paper going in, but you know, any team that loses their starting point guard and a main cog of that offense to some sort of injury for half the game, like that immediately, I think, takes away a big degree of that difficulty. So I would even say, you know, that this West Virginia game, assuming again that there's no injuries on the part of West Virginia, would be most likely the toughest game that they played all year, because West Virginia has that good of a defense. Now, unless they just completely fall apart on the road again, like they have been, but you know, Baylor hasn't really been a super strong team at home anyway. You know, they've been having a lot of issues with a lot of schools that they really shouldn't be having problems with, like we were talking about earlier. So I agree, this is going to be the toughest test for them, and hopefully Kansas winning that game is going to galvanize, you know, West Virginia and get them to play a lot better than they maybe would have if they had beaten Kansas on Wednesday. So I'm hoping for an upset there. It's probably one of the biggest opportunities for Kansas to get back into the Big 12 race would be for that to actually happen. I know I'm definitely looking forward, though, to, you know, if this race really does come down to the bitter end, you know, when Kansas goes to Texas Tech and then Baylor goes to West Virginia to close out the season, you know, this is kind of a little prelude to that, this week being that little prelude there. So hopefully we get a very tight race the rest of the way, and then we have a phenomenal final weekend. So, all right. Any other final thoughts before we get out of here? Did you have a random sports minute for the day?
You know, just super, super quick. The XFL season started last weekend. I was going to do this last week. I can't remember what we did. Oh, yeah, we did the Oscars. Anyway, it's actually been kind of interesting, I think. One thing I do like is the fact that they do their kickoffs where they kick off from the normal spot, but the like the rest of the kicking team lines up at like the 30 or the 25 or whatever it is. Just to kind of reduce them, you know, sprinting all the way down full speed and having those kind of full-on collisions and stuff like that. And I think that that's going to be something that the NFL steals from them, because it was kind of an interesting little wrinkle where you can still have kickoff returns, but you're not going to, like, murder someone while they do it. So I thought that was pretty innovative, and I thought the league as a whole, it was a lot more interesting than I thought it would be. I'm probably going to keep watching it. So if anyone has a team to suggest, feel free to tweet us so that I can have a rooting interest.
Yeah. I mean, I was interested by the few games that I was actually able to watch. My weekends are getting ready to free up a little bit more here in the next couple weeks. And so ideally I'll be able to kind of latch on mid-season. You know, I tried out the AAF when it first came out, and I actually bought into a team immediately without actually buying any of their gear. But, you know, I started following a team and then with, sorely disappointed when the whole thing folded. I'm hoping that a similar sort of thing doesn't happen where I really get into it and then all of a sudden it's not there anymore. You know, I do think that there is an appetite for spring football, and if done correctly, and it seems like the XFL is right now approaching this correctly, you know, finding some way to differentiate themselves, really, you know, setting themselves up for a long-term kind of commitment there to give people an opportunity to get started. It's really just going to come down to, can they get successfully through that first season and then get things set up for a second season? And if they're able to do that, there's definitely an appetite for it. And so I'm excited that it's there, but we'll see. Speaking of football, you know, the one final thing I wanted to talk about, I am going to try to get Mike to talk about, to come on still to kind of talk about recruiting classes and do a super early preview of what we're, you know, kind of going to be looking for in the summer and things like that. But and while this is definitely something that him and I will probably talk about, it was announced today that running backs coach Tony Hull and, you know, Louisiana recruiter extraordinaire is leaving the Kansas program. There's a lot of speculation flying around about whether it was mutual, whether he was offered another job somewhere. And again, I haven't seen any super, you know, official confirmation, but it definitely seems from the way his tweet was worded, and then from some of the rumors that are flying around, that he was offered a position out at Hawaii and is leaving to take that position. It's not an instance, from what I can tell, of him being pushed out. Obviously, that could potentially change. We could get more information about that. But as it stands right now, and I want your opinion on this, Fetch, it seems like this is kind of a guy getting an opportunity to move on and not anything that should be a huge red flag for this team. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it does kind of sound like that. And I guess nothing against Tony Hall. I mean, he was obviously very important, very good recruiter, but I definitely think it's easier to replace those guys than people would kind of give it credit for. Obviously, we had Reggie Mitchell beforehand, who was kind of that guy who running backs coach, really good recruiter. You know, when he left, it was, oh, how are we going to replace him? You know, Tony Hall comes in and does a really good job and maybe even a little bit better job, frankly, in terms of recruiting. And then it's just, you know, just going to be next man up. I mean, I think that you can find guys with his background, although maybe not the NASA stuff. You know, he's maybe a little bit smarter than your average college football running backs coach, but you can find guys with that kind of background who you can bring in and have them, you know, recruit their area and stuff like that. So I think Kansas will be fine. I definitely wouldn't be worried in terms of that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too is, you know, the main reason I think a lot of people were worried was, you know, he has been a huge recruiter, you know, really kind of started the pipeline from Louisiana. But when Les Miles is your head coach, you know, he's got those connections down in Louisiana. So if you're really worried about being able to get some of the same guys, now he may not, you know, Miles is not going to have the same sort of connections with maybe some of the high school coaches and, you know, being able to kind of really find guys down there that Hall might have been able to. But if you're worried about a relationship with guys down in Louisiana, I think Miles will do a whole lot more for those guys than Tony Hall, unless it's a case where, you know, they're only getting in the door because of personal relationships with high school coaches that Hall might have had. So, you know, in those sort of instances, like if it's any of the high profile recruits that they're hoping to try to attract from those areas, I don't think they necessarily need to worry too much. So, all right, we'll go ahead and leave it there. We are out of time at this point, but Fetch, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million of apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe there. You can always get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you could give us a rating and a review, 5 stars and any nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you're unable to do that, just let me know what it is we can be doing better. You can contact me for any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want me to try to interview, anything like that, by email at rocktalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rocktalkpod. Of course, you can always interact with Fetch over on Twitter at rocktalktalk as well. We really do, you know, bring you guys this for your entertainment, to get you all the information that you need. And of course, we do like to interact with you guys over there on Twitter as well. So, but we'll leave it there. Fetch, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.